Hey everybody, welcome to season 2, episode 2 of the Hot Rod Blues. I'm your host, Sean Brereton with Auto Enthusiast Network.
Mike Abbott, Steel Rose Metal Co.
I'm Javier Agustin, okay? With Bummerster Customs.
I'm Sean Young, and I'm not sitting next to this guy anymore. And Matt's down here. Say, hey, Matt.
You have a mic, Matt.
He's not going to do it. All right. So why are we here, guys?
We are here with our guest, Mr. Mike Cooper, Spanky's Hot Rods.
Good evening.
Yeah. Welcome.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys.
Or thank you for having us. I guess I shouldn't say welcome because you welcomed us to your place.
Man, it's going to be a good night.
Yeah, for sure. So, cool shop.
Thank you.
Yes.
Very awesome. Got a lot of cool stuff on the walls and lots of cool stuff.
Well, thank you. It's a working shop, though.
Yeah. That's right.
Got to get the stuff done.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I said it when I got down here. It's a lot cleaner than the last time that I was down here.
Yeah, I knew I had some guys coming over tonight.
Yeah. Had a little work to do, didn't
you? Well, it's not. It's the kind of junk that I love and that we all love, which is hot rod parts and stuff. So, where was all that stuff coming from? Like, tell me a little bit about where that was coming from and basically where you had going on before.
Like the parts and stuff that you bought?
Yeah.
Well, I started with 20,000 square feet in Heber Springs, Arkansas, and we moved back to Hernando, and all of that 20,000 square foot stuff
compressed down,
got rid of a lot of equipment that I missed some of it, but I've still got enough to get the job done. But a lot of those parts had to find new homes for them, you know, stuff I wasn't going to need. No sense hoarding it up and keeping people like you from finding what you need.
Yeah. So, Gene's actually the one that kind of ushered me in here. You know, he mentioned Spanky, and I was like, I know a couple Spankies, but which one are you talking about? The Hot Rod Spanky from Mississippi.
The little rascal.
that coupe deal, Gene actually got that body, and okay. We did like a body. I bought his body, and he bought the body we came down and got.
I was trying to keep up with all that.
Hey, it
was y'all's deal.
It was our deal, but you were really gracious. That thing, I was telling Sean Young on the way down here, that thing haunted me for 2 months. And I wanted that one. And I was like, man, I just don't know. And I kind of like let it go. And one day I'm at Mike's shop. And it was the first day I met Gene was at Mike's shop. And we were talking about the same coupe because he had just bought a coupe. And I said, I don't know this guy. And he goes, oh, I know Mike Cooper. I could call him right now. And he called you right from the shop. And that's how that deal got started.
Yeah, so. I've known Gene for a long time. Great guy.
Yeah, super great guy.
Hey, why don't we hop back and tell us a little bit about how you got started in cars and stuff. Like, what, you know, how did you get a hot rod shop and all that kind of stuff?
Well, getting started in cars, that goes way back. And I'll try to speed through it. But fifth, sixth grade, spent the night with a friend. He lived over by the Coliseum. It was probably in the 70s. All these cars kept coming past. We're outside playing tag or something, you know. And I'm stopping in my tracks, you know, these street rides. And cool cars keep coming by. And I was, you know, fifth, sixth grade. And we talked his dad into following them. And they went to the Coliseum, and it was the very first NSRA Memphis event.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. So, you know, we didn't get to go in, you know, but we stood on the outside and looked in, and that was probably it. I mean, you know, everybody's got a trigger, and that is when I got bit, I guess.
Yeah, it's like having an epiphany or something.
Right, exactly. And so we went around to a few of the hotels, you know, and looked at all the cars then, and, you know, that was just cool. So then from then on, I'm doodling cars and, you know, art project at school, I'm drawing a car and, right. You know, so, fast forward a few years, now I'm, you know, 11, 12, 13, throwing papers, and my paper route was on Getwell and, the speed shop down there where, you know,
full circle,
right. Yeah, you know, and, so I would, I'd walk in and hand them their paper. You know,
right,
kind of
right.
thing. And
a little,
I'd take,
little extra customer service.
I'd take my time going in and coming out. And there's always a cool car sitting out there. And then I had that paper route for a couple of years, you know, 14, 15-ish. And got to meet those guys. And I'd call down there and say, how much would it cost me to have all of my rubber hose on my car in that shiny braided stuff? You know, they knew exactly who I was. Here's that kid again, Colin.
Right.
Oh, $300. So they were just kidding, you know. Well, they probably wasn't kidding, yeah. But they were just throwing numbers out there to get me off the phone. And I'm starting to save my $300. I didn't have That's a car right. yet, you right. know, but I'm saving for parts, you know.
That sounds about right.
And then comes, you know, American Graffiti and, you know, Hollywood Nights, you know, and so it just never stopped. It just went on and on and on from there, you know, and meeting people and following them and, you know, having a goal, you know, and try to achieve that goal.
So what was your first car?
That's
right. Question.
Well, I worked 13 and 14 and 15 and saved my money, except for enough to go skating. And I saved up like $1,150, and I bought a 71 SS Nova, and it was wow. probably in 80-ish, you know, 80, mm-hmm. 81. And I was 15 years old, driving on a hardship. Like the first month that I could drive by myself, I drove. I worked at Baskin Robbins, made $1.25 an hour. And all these cool cars would go by and catch my eye. Where I saw some taillights for a Nova. I jumped out there and I was looking. It was my car.
Oh, no.
It was the last time I saw it.
Oh no. How long did you have it before they took it?
About 6 months.
Dang.
Oh, man.
And it had been stolen once before from the original owner. And he was at the Hot Rod reunion. Gene Finney, if he's watching, we're still friends. And he was bawling his eyes out just like me because that was his baby too.
Wow.
And we both kind of teared up about it at the Hot Rod reunion because we bring it up every time we see each other.
Yeah, shared traumas.
Yeah. And never saw the car again. But the clone of that car is my son's Nova that's up there on the wall.
Yeah, I was going to say, I noticed it was a popular popular hot rodding?
And Car Craft, yeah. And then the Nova and Super Chevy.
Yeah, and the title to it is like Father Like Son.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you about why is it like Father Like Son? Is it just because of cars or is it because of that car?
No, it's cars. He's bit just like I was, yeah. You know, because he was raised around me, you know, doing that, you know, so... but he chose to build that car, that color, and I've only got one picture of my Nova. I still got the title, and I still got that picture. I still run the VIN number.
I was going to say, so you still got the VIN.
I still got the VIN, and I still run it from time to time. It's not in the system, but you can still run it, you know, and
wow.
Nothing's popped up. You know, I'm hoping it'll pop up one day, completely restored.
That would be
you know, yeah,
all the work done. So
all the work done. Right. But I've got a 69 big block 4-speed Nova that, I gave my grandson, which is my son's son, when he was born. My wife said, I need to get rid of some cars. So I gave him one, gave my other grandson
That's
one.
Smart.
You know, and I'm still paying storage on all of them, but
right.
They're not mine anymore, dear.
That's right. It's an investment for the grandkids.
Right. But getting into the shop part of it, you know, I had my Chevelle, which I still have. That was my second car. I bought it for $650 from the original owner, you know, just the hubcap car, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, I built it in my mom's driveway over in East Memphis. I mean, you know, pro-streeted it, the whole deal, in a driveway.
That's awesome.
You know, so that's how I got building cars, I guess, is because I couldn't afford to have anybody else do it. So I, you know, no schooling like that or anything. I just learned from 15 and up. You know, doing right. my own work because I couldn't afford to, you know, have anybody else do it. And that car and my connections I made at the speed shop on Getwell when I was a kid landed me a job at RHS on Summer Avenue.
Wow, and no kidding.
Worked up there for 3 or 4 years until I knew we were fixing to get married and actually, you know, needed a real job because we got paid $5 a day in commission,
right.
You know, and 3% commission on jobber sales and 6% on retail sales, but they considered retail 5% over jobber. So if you think you ever got a deal and got jobber back in the day from all of us guys, trust me, you got 5% over jobber, you know.
Wow.
So you still got a good deal. So.
Right.
Spanky's got to eat.
Yeah. So, you know.
So when you went to the speed shop up there, who was working the speed shop? Was it Was it Bruce?
Bruce worked on Elvis Presley.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Todd, his brother, okay. was the manager. And me, Skeeter Tedesco, which worked at the speed shop on Get Well, which I was always calling Skeeter, asking him, how much are those gold Holley carburetors? You know,
because right.
the ones in the magazine on the cars, they were gold plated back
right,
in the day.
Right.
And I wanted the gold one, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? It's, oh, they're about $50, you know. You know, he would say, you know.
Right.
But we became friends, and he became an, you know, a mentor of mine, which, you know, and when I got to work with him at RHS, I mean, when he'd show up to work on Monday, he had stories. They weren't real always true, but
right.
they were the coolest stories.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, man, what'd you do to your hand? You know, it'd be all busted up and, oh man, I was speed shifting and, you know, and yeah. went for second, third, and then my hand went into the air conditioner vents, you know, and all this
right.
kind of stuff. And then, Patsy, his wife, would come in later and says, how's your hand? I was like, man, what happened to that? He was weed eating or something. And but I would never tell. I'm telling now.
That's
he's,
right.
He's not with us anymore. And,
right.
and that guy's name needs to be brought up because he was, if y'all didn't know Skeeter, then man, he was awesome. I mean, got a lot of neat stories. Summer Avenue days with Skeeter, you know, we'd, when I worked at RHS, we'd, you know, of course, we were both Summer Avenue hoodlums, I guess, you
right.
know, running up and down the street. We both had keys to RHS. And when the traffic and everything would get thick, we would pop in, we'd pull our car in, put it on the lift and start doing stuff to it. And we'd look out there at the window and everybody had their hands, you know, pressed faces all pressed up against it. We thought we were cool.
Yeah.
He was cool. I was just the kid hanging out.
right.
You know?
Where was RHS on Summer?
Right across the street from McDonald's and Zaire.
Yeah.
Down the street from Lucky's. Well, where Lucky's would be, right?
Oh, yeah. Lucky's was Super yeah. Shops.
Lucky's was Super Shops.
Super Shops.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
O'Reilly's now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they came to town, and about the time they came to town, a wholesale tire company came to town that y'all would know about, but one of our guys at RHS went to work there, and they were ready to outfit the place with company trucks and salesmen and all that. So he made that phone call, and four of us, we're all going to give our notice the same day. And we did. And we all went into the wholesale tire business, and one of us stayed and the other ones went back to RHS and comp cams, you know? So I was stuck in the tire business for 15, 20 years.
Right.
Selling.
Yeah. Selling.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a territory and a company truck, and I was a kid. I was, you know, 19, 20 years old, and I was married, fixing to get married. So trust me, it was a way more money than the $5 a day
right.
and the commission.
Yeah.
So you just had an anniversary yesterday.
Yeah, I was
just
saying.
Happy anniversary, man.
Thank you. 37 years.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
So it's important we bring that up. How has she been on the whole journey? And everyone, all the husbands at home are like.
He can't say
we
that.
We can't. All the husbands at home are like, why are you asking him that?
No, she's been a trooper. I mean, she loves. Well, I mean, I don't know that she loves it. She doesn't really like to ride in the cars because she doesn't want anybody looking at her, kind of thing. You know, the attention that a hot rod gets.
Oh,
you know,
right. yeah.
We're all used to it. But believe it or not, the women probably. You know.
Yeah.
But they're not looking at your hair, dear. I promise you. They're looking at the wheels.
Right.
You
know? That's right.
But yeah, she's you know, keeps me out of trouble. So you know.
That's good.
You yeah. know. I mean, cars are expensive, but so are bass boats and golf clubs and,
that's right.
you know.
Guns or whatever.
Guns and all that other kind of stuff.
Might have even brought in some money.
Yeah. yeah. Well, I mean, the hot rod part of it came about because I sold our tire business.
Right.
And at that time when I sold the tire business, I was, you know, didn't really know what to do. And when I sold it, I did it with a non-compete clause so that I'd get the heck out of the tire business, you know, force myself. And, I mean, I was building my son's Nova. It did really well, got a lot of attention, which brought me a customer. And that customer's car got a lot of attention and brought me more customers. And then it was just a snowball until I had to get rid of the snowball, yeah. You know.
I'll right. tell you, it's a difficult business to be in. I've never been there, but I've got friends that do it, mm-hmm. and it is. It's a hard row to hoe for sure.
Well, with me being passion driven and all, the next car had to be better than the last one, better than and that yeah. snowball is stressful.
Yeah,
I mean, you had customers, but I mean, the bigger, fancier, more expensive the car, the stress, you know. Your customers, yeah. you know.
The demands go up on everything. Yeah, on yourself.
And, right. Yeah. I mean, I was probably more harder on myself than the customer's ever been. I mean, and then when I get a customer, it's, I shy away from a customer that says, I got this car, I want this color, and I want these wheels on it, and all that kind of stuff. You know, basically, they drop the car off, and I get to do whatever I want to it.
They're making fun of me.
That's you.
I pulled an Abbott.
You guys are pointing at me. My microphone is not in my face.
Sorry, Spanky. We have a phantom heavy breather in the group.
Okay.
This happened. Everyone at home, I'm sorry. You heard it before we did, if you're listening right now. But it happens occasionally, and it's usually Mike. But okay. I think it was Sean this time.
Yeah, it was me.
Anyway, Spanky, you're saying about your craft and passion, and I think that's why he started breathing heavy in the first place.
What did I say? No. Everybody's looking at you. Yeah.
Nothing, no. Just passion.
Trying to figure out what it is. When we started doing this season one, I guess after season one, you know, I smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And normally I'm in the story. So I'm like, they're like, Mike, this time, try not to breathe into the microphone. So, of course,
I'll pull it away from you.
It's usually, I don't mind it, but usually you'll get like a whistler. There's like a booger. Yeah. It's just sitting there.
So anyways, that's aside from the story.
Anyway, back to your profession and passion for cars.
Yes.
Yeah, the customer is only one part of the...
Right.
It's only one part of it. The, you know, I think me and you are a lot alike in a lot of aspects, mm-hmm. and being your own worst critic makes it...
It's really tough.
Yeah, because the customer's like, oh, this is great, or they think it's great long before you do.
Right.
Which isn't good enough.
Well, the good thing, I'm pretty smart, I guess, when it comes to common sense, and I saw the direction that I was going, and I had to stop it. You know, I mean, I kept wanting to be bigger and bigger and better and do everything, and did a couple of SEMA cars, and I saw it through some of my employees at the time. I only had one or two employees, and we did a TV show, Search and Restore, and I sent him on the body shop portion of it. Each episode was like one episode was going picking a car up. Next episode's taking it apart, and then fit and finish and body and paint and stuff. And he came back, and I'm sorry if you're watching, but he came back and his head couldn't fit through the building. And
right.
He wanted twice as much money because all the other people that were there, they came from everywhere. I mean, anybody that
right.
could afford to stop what they were doing or send somebody, and, you know, guys from L.A. and Chicago and stuff like that.
Hutch was on that, too.
You know, yeah, they just wanted
exposure.
Yeah, twice as much money yeah. and this and that. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but, I mean, I came to this little town and I'm paying you Memphis wages.
Right.
Which is 3 times what the other guys are making here in this town. And I'm not going to double that.
Right.
You know, kind of thing. So,
or you can go to the other hot rod shop.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not here. Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
But, you know, so I saw that and I didn't want to be that guy, you know? And, right. So I started saying no and toning everything down, still doing the same quality of work, doing the same stuff, but you know,
yeah.
just trying to get out of the limelight, so to speak.
For sure.
You know, and
so when they came back from the show, did you have to talk to their agent about their wages or?
Yeah,
I'm just
had your agent call me right. Type thing. So, you know,
did you, so you were living in Hernando and then you just decided Heber was where you were going to do it. What took you over there, I
guess? Well, we've had a lake house over there 25, 26 years now. And at that point, it's probably 10 years. Kids went to college. We didn't have anything holding us down here. And by that time, I probably had, you know, 4 or 5 customers that I was doing work for. And it didn't really matter to them. Actually, only one of them was local anyway then. So, hey, you know, they're let's go over there and check it out. But the house that we had was more of a weekend lake type house, and we needed more of a permanent type house. So we found a house downtown, 100 years old. You know, my wife's passion for houses is like mine for cars. So we restored an old house and or remodeled it. We put it back like it should have been 100 years ago, but with a you know,
some updates.
OE plus, yeah. I guess, you know.
Yeah. OE plus. Yeah. A resto mod. Like that. Yeah. A little bit of a resto mod.
You took the 1990 out of it and put some cool stuff back in it.
Oh, but, it took all the brass out.
Yeah. But, it, you know, we were doing the old get it on the registry kind of thing, but it had a concrete driveway. And I'm like, I'm not taking this brand new concrete driveway out and, and put strips down. We'll forget that, you know. But there wasn't a place for a shop or a garage.
Right.
So, and we still had the house here, so... There was a 20,000 square foot, 100-year-old building downtown, you know, right there, right in the square. So I may try to find some pictures of it, but it was probably the worst thing. We probably looked at it 20 or 30 times, and I went in it a couple of times. And I carried her in it, and all these little creatures were running. There was there was a tree that was like 6 inches round growing up out of the concrete floor because of all the debris that was in there.
It's like our building.
Yeah.
I didn't want to mention it, but it sounds like how we work out of that building today. And we've cleaned it up.
But we took flashlights in for the very first time, and it was for sale, and it had been for sale for 5 or 6 years. And took flashlights in, I shined it up, and I saw these metal trusses. Now, the ceiling was wood, and it had the rock and tar on top and stuff. Well, not really anymore, but it started that way. But the had beams, the steel beams and stuff, and she says, "This is not that bad."
Got good bones.
Like,
good bones.
Like sold. So it was really weird. You know, it was back to my wheeling and dealing. But we had bought the house downtown, the 100-year-old home. We still had the little house for sale that we had. And the guy that owned the building was still next door in a brand new building that they built, you know, to,
well, they're transitioning
because they didn't want to put the roof and all that. He was smart. He didn't want to. So I traded him that house for that building.
Wow.
And then we completely gutted it and put all brand new everything in it, and then added a building on that was basically the paint and body part of the building. And yeah, it's still there and doing good. And it was right downtown. And, you know, you got to be careful what you pray for, because I got that. Prayed for it, got it, and then after employees and trying to downsize my head, you know, and all that, I was like, man, I wish I was in my shop at home, you know.
A lot less stress.
Yeah. So I put an exit strategy plan together and groomed one of the employees, and owner financed it all, and he's there. But by that time, 10 years had probably – came and very successful there. Probably had 40 full-blown projects to do, and half of them were probably unlimited budget type projects.
Wow.
So, and I didn't have employees to do it. So, you know.
Well, you got to know when to walk away and hand it off.
So, owner financed it all, left a lot of the equipment behind, you know, financed all that with him, you know, and, left all but probably 10 customers behind, and I kept the ones that would have gone somewhere else anyway.
Right.
And I'd already done multiple cars for these guys. So I've really had the same customers for 20 years, 22 years, however long I've been doing it.
Wow.
You know, and I mean, most of them all want to do another one, but I'm really, if you're all watching, I'm really, you know, I've got my own stuff that I want to do, and you know, these things eat up a lot of time. People don't realize it, but I mean, 2,000 hours, you know, 2,000 hours in one is not a lot, no. You know. So that's a year, you know. So, yeah,
right.
You know, they add up quick,
yeah.
You know, and I'm not fast like I used to be, you know, so... Nowhere near as fast as I used to.
The meter stays running, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I got a pretty cheap meter. You can still put pennies and nickels in my meter, yeah. You know. I mean,
right.
I don't have that dollar slot yet.
Yeah.
We're all talking minutes, though.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Right, right.
12 minutes turn into hours. So.
Yeah.
So you look at some of your projects, they've rotated through since the last time I was here, but there's one in this room right now that I was blown away with from – Jump Street, and that's this orange, beautiful orange roadster behind Mike and
Thank
Sean.
You. Thank you.
And you wouldn't know it, and we'll get some pictures. But those wheels are brown, and you told me the color.
Yeah,
I want you to tell a story on it.
Well, I mean, I knew my inspiration. I mean, it could be a women's handbag. It could be anything. And the inspiration of that is a Reese's peanut butter cup. Wrapper, except for the orange, you know, I mixed that orange up, sent it off, had it, you know, formulated and everything. And it's actually called Spanky Sweet Potato, and it's in their catalog.
But, very cool.
If anyone listening at home wants that color, look it up.
Yeah. I know my wife said the other day, she said, is your car in a garage? And then she turned the phone around and she was on my phone and it was a clone to my car, and it was a buddy of mine, and he asked me what color my car was a year ago.
Oh no.
Wow.
That's
same wheels and
that's
everything.
So terrible. Really? But it's such flattery, but it's also like, why?
Yeah, it's like, why, at least change the wheels or something.
Yeah
so but yeah, that's the inspiration behind that, is the Reese's peanut butter cup. The wheels, I had a scanner and I scanned the side of the UPS truck.
There it is. Yeah. That's
scanned the side of the UPS truck because I, you know, I cleaned it for him and all that, scanned it. And I had no idea that UPS trucks had metallic in them.
Yeah.
So I send the formula down and have them send me a pint so I could paint the wheels and stuff. I painted them. They looked great in the paint booth. I took them outside the sheet, see what it looked like. Man, green and blue and red flakes on there. I was like, what? And it's so faint.
It's subtle.
You can see it, you know. So then I was like, I need that same color, but don't put any metallic in it, you know.
Flat it out.
Yeah. So that's, it's satin.
Yeah.
And did the interior, all that.
Yeah.
Same way.
Yeah. And he'll have plenty of pictures, but everyone, and maybe they scan it through, but so we talked about the carpet. Where'd you get the carpet?
Bed, Bath, and Beyond.
There you go. For all your hot rod needs.
Yeah.
It's in the Beyond section. So you've got that, and then you cranked it over for me when I was here with Gene. And it sounded like a sewing machine. And I've got a little snippet video of it. And I was like, man, can I show anybody this? Because you were telling me that. Can you talk about the intake setup on that and the carburetor setup on that?
Yeah. It's got an Jim Inglis intake on it. He did 10 intakes, 5 of those 90-degree distributor to offset the distributor for the fourth carburetor. He did 5 air breathers. And I've got 3 of the 5 air breathers.
There's
one of them right there, and only 2 of them have been complete.
Right.
But that setup right there was all chrome plated and all that, and it was his catalog's front cover, you know, setup.
Yeah.
But he's a really cool guy. Comp Cams bought his company, but you know, he moved to Florida. He's still around. And he didn't even have one of those air breathers, but he sent me and helped me on the phone rebuild those carburetors and sent me the kits and stuff cheap. And I still bought them and I sent him one of the air breathers.
That's cool.
It's kind of a rare setup. I don't know why he didn't. About the time that he was making those, they were coming out EFI stuff.
Yeah, the downdraft, that whole catalog's all downdraft stuff.
Right.
And it's impressive. But to see that and know that that was part of his catalog, it blew me away. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah. But he on that intake, it's set up for the DCNF40 Webers, which is 84 Ferrari.
That's the Ferrari, yeah.
So first, before I called him, I got the part number off the carburetor, Googled it. I found the kits in the Ferrari boxes. The kits were $320 per carburetor.
Wow.
I called him. He said, nah. Each kit was like $27.
Wow.
Same exact parts.
Wow.
Yeah. They weren't pretty Ferrari boxes, but yeah. I mean,
right.
So, I mean, he earned the air breather.
Yeah.
Just then.
Oh, yeah. Just, right. Yeah. Just paid for that right then and there.
Right.
That's crazy. That's yeah. That's a very expensive box.
Yeah.
That's a $300 box.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you had a Ferrari, you wouldn't bat an eye, though.
Right, you right. Know. For sure.
You just...
Yeah, if your name's Enzo, right. that's right on the price, though.
Well, you have a Bronco beer that you're working on?
Hovering perilously. That's a safe lift, but it still makes me nervous every time.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably had that lift for 20 plus years.
And there's always dropped one yet.
Always been a car on it, and always been a car under it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not usually that car. I mean, I rode that car in here for you guys.
Oh,
plus, I had to put all the small stuff in here so we could get this table.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, this shop is. We never have this much room in this shop.
So much room for activity.
Everything in here is on wheels. So if I'm working on one,
you got to push one.
The other two get pushed over to the side, but. You know, you would never know it that there was 12 cars in here,
right.
There's a lot of different types. I mean, you got a Porsche sitting back there, you know.
Yeah.
You got a street rod. You've got the street rod here. You got, what's that, Bel Air?
Yeah.
60,
a couple 60 of Broncos.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's passion driven, and I wish I'd said no to the Bronco. You know, I've never done one, so
right.
I'm up for a challenge. You know, it's not in my
You're at a place in your art, I think, where everyone does. Right. You don't.
I've done
like a lot of artists. You don't want to be bored. You need a new challenge,
right.
Like you said. So
right.
Why not? It's the same putty. We're going to make something different
right.
out of this.
You know, and the stipulation was let me do it my way, and I did. I mean, that Bronco's far from stock. A whole lot of stuff. You never know it because my design is not like everybody else's. I mean, I like everything being super clean and simple. You know, less is more on my deal, and I don't like your eye having to stop and look at a cool a shiny set of wheels that don't go on a car. I want your eye to just flow.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want the tag to stop you. I don't want this to stop you. You know, I don't want anything to steal from the design, you know?
Right.
So,
well, aesthetics is everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that I do it right, but I do it and I'm happy with it. And you know,
I'd say you do it right.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
you. Well, it's very nice.
Without signing it. I think everyone could pick something that you've done out. Like if you looked at it, you're like, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense.
So I've got a weird question. If you could have any car, what would it be?
I think I've got it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I've got, there's not anything I got right now that I want to get rid of. And there's not really anything that I want that I don't have.
Yeah. I'm with you.
You know, and everything that I've ever got for myself has always been a project. I mean, that's the only way I can afford it. I mean, I just bought that Porsche. I've wanted one since the picture that I had as a kid, but I was not going to go spend $175, $150, $30. I mean, when I was ready to buy one finished and ready to go back in the 80s, you know, they were 15, didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, by the time I had the 15, they done jumped to 30.
Back up.
You know, by the time I got the 30, you know, they done, you know, so I was never, ever going to catch a finished one, you know, and it wouldn't have been no fun anyway, would it?
Yeah,
that's right.
You wouldn't have put the Speggy signature.
Right. And I you know, that's, you know, I catch a lot of flack, you know, from my YouTube channel followers because I am doing a hot rod outlaw, you know, car. And 90% of those Porsche guys don't get it.
No, they hate that.
You know, but
they're purists. That's
right.
The name,
right. So. And I understand, but I mean, man, they made more than one.
Yeah.
Right.
Go get one of those and make that one perfect.
Who's that man? I'm trying to remember the Porsche guy's name. All he does is do like outlaw Porsches
Rob.
Can you remember his name?
Ron Magnus.
No, it's Rod Emery.
Well, he does the 356s. Right. Yeah. And he's right around the corner.
356s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the guy that does
those. Mangus.
Is that it?
Long hair.
Yeah. Used to,
Yeah. You know, he has some original stuff.
Yeah.
But he's an outlaw guy. I mean, you know, and that's.
And he has like a clothing design.
Yeah. He used to have. Yeah. He used to have a clothing company. And he may still have it. I don't know. But he has got one of every year Porsche, and they're all cool, and he's right downtown in L.A. and
right,
you know, best friends with Seinfeld.
Yeah,
you should you should look. Yeah. Seinfeld's a big Porsche guy.
Yeah,
I want to buy a Porsche just so I can LS swap it.
No.
Yeah, go over like a fart in the space.
There's a few been done. There was one that seemed.
LS is speaking of, they'll probably put an LS on Mars. I'm pretty sure.
Right,
as soon as the atmosphere.
Can right beside a white that. Claw.
It'll be EV everything.
I'd rather EV it than LS it, I think.
You know, I was thinking about this today since we brought EV up, which we tried not to do on this show.
I know.
The Hummer EVs have finally hit the market, and I saw where somebody took they plugged it in on 120, and it said it was going to take 4 days to charge. And all I could think about is I can't wait till one gets flooded or insured. So I could – it's going to be like my Porsche. I'm going to chase that thing till I can get my hands on it so that I can swap something dirty and nasty into it that burns fossil fuels.
Okay. We really need the sound effect so we can do the womp, womp, womp.
Wait, anytime Matt's got the microphone for that. Yeah. Womp, womp,
womp. Anytime someone says EV or LS swap,
womp, womp, womp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Tesla in space.
Is it still orbiting?
You know what else is in space?
Space?
Nothing. Oh. That matters.
More space?
That matters. So what is this over here? 36?
It's a 36 Pontiac. Really cool car. I mean, changed out all the wood inside to steel, made running boards, reshaped the rear fenders. It used to have a trunk on the back of it, you know, so got another GM deck lid and then made the back half to fit all of that. So, it, you know, I like using the word sexy when you're talking about a cool car.
Yeah.
But it gives it that.
Like every guy lives, you know,
It gives it that.
Heavy breathing stuff.
Yeah.
Totally. That blown up skirt look kind of thing.
Okay.
You know?
Maybe so. Not that much.
Well, you know.
You dirty bird.
The back of it actually reminds me a little bit of like the Chrysler Airfoil.
Yeah.
The way it.
And I did. You shot the other car that I did, but I did a 36 Chevy for Jerry Patton, you know, that black one with the pink flames.
And That's right.
I did the same thing to that car.
Yeah.
You know, and
I like that car.
That car's in speed?
It was.
Yes, okay. He sold it. It's actually in Burbank now.
Oh, wow.
You know, those folks contacted me, and, you know, Jason gave them the number and everything, and they contacted me about it. But I built that car in 2004.
Wow.
Yeah, 2003, 2004.
So that guy had a lot of Chevys. He had the Hemi powered Chevy.
Yep. He had that. I built him a 58 Nomad, and kind of a Kiwi green and black, and it did a really good job in all the magazines and cover of a few catalogs and stuff, and I think he still has that car.
Man, you're going to make it so hard for me to find pictures of all these damn cars.
if you could name drop a few more, I'm having
a panic attack over here right now. Listen to that.
He's not writing any of this down. He's going to have to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I've got pictures of just about everything that I've built, just because, I mean, these things are like, they're like family, you know, when you build one and you're working on it every day or, you put 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 hours into one, and some of those big high-end cars I've done, I mean, they've had, you know, you spend a lot of time with a car.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd love to have every one I ever built, but I mean, my tastes change and I would not build the same car over again. You know, by the time I get one finished, I'm ready to change half the stuff on it, but if it belongs to a customer, you can't do that.
Right.
Well, I got to say, too, that the one that we were talking about, what was it, 36 Chevy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a 36 Chevy. It's black, and it had pink flames on it.
Yeah.
And
there's a story with all of that.
Well, yeah. So I knew the story, or I think Justin told me the story, but like black and pink, like pink flames, you'd be like, man, God, that sounds so gaudy, you know, but it's done so well that I wanted that car. I mean, I was like, man, I'd have no problem with pink.
It was a 36. Basically the same kinda, as this, but the front end is different. But that was for Jerry's daughter. And
the whole car was going to be pink, right? Or they wanted the whole
thing. Brought me a catalog or a Street Rod magazine or a Street Rod book from Barnes & Noble that was printed in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it had the seafoam green. It had the coral. It had this. And she had all these pages bookmarked. I'm like,
all the old Street Rod colors.
I'm not that artist guy that, okay, now where do we put the next line?
Right.
That's going to put my lines where I want to put them. Or, I mean, I don't want to, it don't matter if I'm broke and don't have another customer. I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing it for the passion.
That's right.
And if I've got to paint by number somebody else's picture. So anyway, I was like, okay. And I was tiptoe. You just can't slam the door on.
Right.
So I'm like, all right. Who's going to drive it down to the alignment shop? Me, you, or her? Because I don't want to drive a pink car, And he said, well, what are you thinking? I was like, let's just put some pink flames on it, let's paint it, So I did renderings and stuff and all that back in the day and did a rendering of it, a couple different ways, pink stripes, pink this, pink that, And the way it ended up is the black and the flames aren't necessarily pink. I mean, it's all house of color and there's probably 10 different colors in there, purples and blues and reds and violets and stuff like that. But it gives the pink look. And it says I'm a girl's car. And it's a girl's car now. Lady's husband bought it for
her. Oh, that's cool.
Bought it for his wife and all that. So it's but I spent.
But as a guy, you could drive it. It's not embarrassingly pink or anything.
I left here.
We get it, Sean. You want to drive a pink car.
I left here in it. Drove it all the way to Louisville to the Street Rod Nats and drove it all around all weekend and didn't think that much about it. Yeah. I mean,
heads the whole weekend.
I knew I was in a car with pink flames, but nobody else seemed to care that much about it, So
when was that car built? Probably.
Yeah, 03, 04 era.
Okay.
So
it's 20 years ago or so, and which it's still relevant. It doesn't look like it was a, 90s car or whatever. It's still not good to go.
Get off subject or toot my own horn, but that I take pride in building something that is
timeless.
And I stay true to that even with the customer. I was like, no, we can't do that.
That's hard to do. That is hard to do because it's the fanfare of using new technology.
Right.
Switching everything over to LED seems like a great idea.
When Dakota Digital first started, they had the blue digital, it was just all digital and stuff, and everybody went crazy over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then within, 3 years?
Well,
it had three years or so, it was like they didn't want it anymore, And so Dakota was smart and they went over to the analog digital.
And it's silly, like the littlest things about that, because that was around 2000 when that stuff came out. Yeah. Those LCD the backlighting to those things.
Yeah.
If they had transformers, you probably remember this because you put a lot of them or dealt with them. They have a high-pitched whine. They used to. Mm. They've changed all that. But it's just the annoying little things like that take away from the experience of the car.
Yeah. I didn't even know that. I heard that.
I've always been
My cars are too loud to hear anything.
Right out.
Okay, we get it. Big blower shaking everything. You're still in a pink car, Sean.
I like the blower stuff too.
Yeah.
You've got a few cases around here.
Yeah. Well, my Chevelle, I put a blower on it in high school and, I got a case from a buddy of mine. I probably say his name. I know he watches, worked for Mata. mechanic.
Oh, diesel.
You know,
671.
And it's a GMC 671.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gene.
And, sorry, Matta.
Anyway, no, of course it was covered. Yeah. Right. Covered in grime and was gone. So, took it to Paul Cosma, and Paul, I was just a little kid in high school, you know, and Paul took care of me on it. I mean, I think I paid him $100 or something like that to rebuild my blower, you know. And
will you tell everybody who Paul Cosma is?
Paul? Yeah, I mean, he's...
We brought him up in the show.
We're coming for you, Paul. You're going to be on the show.
I mean, Paul's good guy, man. He's, man, I don't know if there's anybody around here any smarter than he is or can do stuff that, I mean, he's passion-driven and works out of his house and... He's just good.
Very,
I mean,
selectively works out of his house.
Very, yeah, I mean, he, I mean, you know, I was over there one time and Billy Gibbons was over there, you know, and Paul had his car and kept his car here because his girl, Billy's girlfriend was from Memphis. And, I remember I got off, here I am changing subjects, but I worked at Big Star and I had the Chevelle and I was got off work and I was headed to Summer Avenue, you know, first place I got to go. I'm not going to go home. I'm going to Summer Avenue. It's Friday night. And I pull up at the red light at White Stations in Quince, and Billy Gibbons pulls up next to me, him and his girlfriend. And no lie, he rolls down the window, this Mercury, and he's like, just like the video.
Yes.
And did not even know who it was.
Really?
Not until I got up to Summer
Avenue. Was it off-putting to him? Was he like, I did the thing?
He didn't roll it down all the way. It was just like,
Just enough
for the fingers.
Yeah, and went on up Summer Avenue, and we're sitting up there, and we're at Racing Head, or one of the cruise spots and all that, and then he goes by, and then everybody's like, there goes Billy Gibbons. I'm like, that's who that was? Wow. You know, it was pretty cool.
I have a similar story.
What?
Not Billy Gibbons. Oh. So I was at the corner of Poplar and Bellevue. And I live in that neighborhood, and I'm on my way home, and Isaac Hayes rolls by in a white Cadillac and does the same thing to me.
Wow.
Yes.
Yes. So we got to start doing that to people, like at the red lights rolled out. Well, in my case.
I don't have any business doing that. They'd be like some guy waved to me.
We weren't next to each other. I mean, I literally looked to my left, and he was about to go in front of me, but he realized that I recognized him, and he played on it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
just right, man.
Absolutely. You couldn't hear him. You were too far away.
No. We weren't next to each other. He was in the, you know.
Hello, children.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get any of that. But
no chocolate salty.
Okay. No. No, wow. Not at all.
Yeah. Well, Paul did that blower case for me, and my wife and I got married not too many months after that. I graduated and stuff, and these little plastic things that you get in the mailbox when you get married. And all the numbers on them, you sign the back of them.
Yeah.
We got one of them. My wife goes, what would you like to buy with this? You know, we were just kids, you know.
Right.
I was like, well, I do need a blower drive. You know. So it only took us 10 years to pay for that $550 blower drive, you know, an intake. But so.
Yeah, one piece at a time.
One piece at a time, buddy.
That's it. So does it have a blower on it now?
Yeah, it's got a 671.
I don't know if I've ever seen that car.
Yeah, I mean,
you get out in it?
Well, I get out where I'm close enough to walk home. The tires on the back of it are probably older than Matt. Matt might be the youngest one here.
Yeah, Matt's the youngest one here.
Matt, how old are you? 34. Yeah, the tires are really close to your race. And
I still need a blower, too, though.
Yeah, but that was the very first Pro Street car in Memphis. I worked at RHS when I built it. Had the very first set of Mickey Thompsons that RHS ever got. And there were street cars. There were cars on the street that were race cars. You know, Funky Tom and some of those guys would bring out their drag cars. But that car was built for the street, you know. And I probably put...
That'd be you and Sam Toon.
Yeah, we were inseparable on Summer Avenue. We were both blown pro street cars going up and down the street.
Yeah.
But I beat him probably by 4 years, you know, getting it out on the street.
Okay.
His was, you know, a labor of love. Kind of, but, I mean, it was high dollar. I mean, you know, mine wasn't high dollar. I mean, you know, mine was – I built mine in my mom's driveway, you know. So, with some Craftsman tools, but
yeah. Shook the same amount of windows coming down Summer Avenue though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was pretty fun. And my uncle happened to be a police officer on the Summer Avenue beat, and I was probably pulled over more times than just about anybody on Summer Avenue. Wow. And everybody, I'm telling it now, everybody thought I was a bad boy. But it was like, hey, I'm just checking on you.
You all good?
Yeah, is everything good? He pulled me over right dead center. Two cars, him and his best friend, pulled me over right in front of Super Shop.
Oh.
Right in front of Super Shop.
Give everyone a show.
Yeah. And put me in the back of the car just to talk to me. He goes, you're going to be famous after this, basically.
Yeah,
and
right.
It was, I mean, it was the talk of the town, man. I was only like 17 years That's old. Hilarious. I was so cool then, you know. And, of course, everybody's like 5 feet away on the sidewalk looking at me. And then I get out of the car and I pull on in the Super Shop. And, I mean, the sea parted when they let me in because you couldn't get in that place,
yeah.
You know. I mean, the sea parted. They pulled around. Everybody's following me. I pulled up and stopped. I said, man, what did he say? He said, told me that he catched me racing again. The car's his, you know. Yeah. So my Chevelle was the fastest car on Summer Avenue to never, ever race on the street. You know, and I was proud of that. I never did. I went and watched 1,000 street races, but. You know,
back there on New Highland Bridge.
Yeah, I mean, just about everywhere that there was a street race, you know, I was right there with everybody watching it. But I never got out there, you know.
I don't know.
I knew who was going to catch me.
Yeah,
and it wasn't going to be no outrunning. All he had to do is look.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So
phone calls.
Yeah.
You know. Sunday dinners.
Man, yeah, every Friday and Saturday night I was. Running on New Highland Bridge.
Yeah, I mean, there was a few fun, you know, he would come over sometimes on Sunday and eat and want to know if I knew the guy in the yellow Camaro or if I knew the guy in this. I said, no, sir.
I ain't no rat.
You know, I knew you, Chris, you know, you know, and all that, but, you know. I didn't tell nobody.
They could have fake arrested you. I think that like a McLovin story, like have you.
Right.
You'll never take me alive, copper.
Yeah.
That was
memories right there.
That's cool.
You know, I was just a kid. I was scared. I knew it was my uncle, and I was still scared. I'm like, what did I do?
Oh, right.
Yeah. I was scared too. Like I still raced, but I was, you know, every time I was, I never got comfortable with it. You know,
you can't race scared, like, Sean.
I know, but that's probably why it wasn't any good. You know,
quarter mile at a time.
Well, the other thing was, is at one point I put the straight shifter in it, so you know H pattern's up and down, so you lift it up to put it in first, so it's first
inline shifter.
And I never got the stupid rods right, and it would if you went to hammer it between second and third, it would lock into gear, like, so it would be stuck in between two gears, you know, so you're like, oh, there goes the car in the other lane. So that's why I never raced for money. Because I was like, I never knew when it was going to be.
Because your lack of mechanicking skills.
Exactly. Because I couldn't get under, but I used to have to go and I'd have to pull over to the side of the road.
Get underneath the car and wiggle it.
Yeah, get under there and move it back. I burnt the crap out of my arm right there one time on the muffler because the muffler was right there.
So Mike and I were just having this conversation today, not about really cool cars. Well, yeah, the delivery. How your cars... Especially when you first get a car, you start learning if it's a piece or it's something you're working on. You learn the personality of this car.
Oh, yeah.
And only you, because you're around it all the time, know that, and you start talking to it. But you actually know the little tricks and everything.
Yeah.
And I love that about old cars. Even high-end hot rods have their little quirks.
Yeah.
You're like...
Absolutely.
It's just, it's the personality. Every car has a personality.
Yeah, my 55's got all sorts of weird little quirks that, like, if I were to just say, here... drive it, you wouldn't know what to do. It's got manual brakes, it's got the gas pedal, because I have manual clutch in there. It's not a hydraulic clutch, so because of the way that the rod goes, I put a low car cable gas pedal on it. Well, that comes right where the clutch pedal comes, right? So I ended up having to move the gas pedal up. And let me tell you, if you move a gas pedal up just half an inch, how different the gas pedal works.
Oh, your response, yeah.
And your throttle response. Yeah, because the fulcrum point or whatever moves. Right. So, you know, so you're pushing and you're like, and then it goes over the fulcrum point and you hammer the gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad drove it for the first time. And we drove down Summer Avenue, and then I turned around in, like, I can't remember the name of the place, but there's a place that was like a call center or something there on the left at Sycamore View. I turned around and we swapped spots, and he got in the car and he pushed that gas pedal. He's trying to get used to the clutch, right? Where's the clutch at and whatever. And he hits the gas pedal and it's like, spins the tires, throws a clutch back in. And it was like, sorry about that, Dad. You know, it's a little off, you know? So you just got nowhere to put your foot. Like, to me, I get in, I don't even notice it anymore, you know, but like in right. the very beginning,
I get it,
you know? Yeah. Yeah. So it's always, you know, yeah. Flick on the fuel pump. You got all those little things that you got to do. So you know?
The Impala that I ran up on my old high school sweetheart, when I ran up on her again and the guy was kind enough or cruel enough to let me take it around the parking lot. Mm-hmm. When I got in it, he was about to tell me something. And before he could tell me, I'd already pumped it. It wouldn't start unless you pumped it 3 times. And you bump the key, and it was the same. I did it out of reflex because I drove it for 3 years in high school.
Yeah.
And he was starting to tell me it's a little, and I was like clack clack clack, and it fired off. He goes, oh, and I was like, this is my car. This is my car. I don't want to go down that rabbit.
So many little things like that. It's Fairlane's the same way though. It's got the clutches and a monster on it, and it's like an on-off switch. And
it's funny to me that you're like, it's a manual clutch and manual brakes. Like everything I own is that way. I don't even know what hydraulic clutches feel like.
I know.
It's weird. I got my first one last year.
I don't like it. I actually don't like it. I mean that was why I kept the 55
mechanical
clutch. Oh, hydraulic. I hate hydraulic.
I love it.
Hate it.
I'm in love.
Yeah,
it's always go good.
I definitely hate the Fairlane.
It's probably been weak legs you were walking around on.
chick legs. I've got
them. Yeah, it's chick legs.
My 55 is way easier than the one in my Fairlane.
He's got a navel injury. Okay,
a navel.
Just everyone listening at home, it's not a belly button injury. This man. Thank you for your service. Yeah, I'm sorry about your ankle on the ship.
I was fighting a war at sea.
Yeah. An emotional war. It was in a sea of emotion.
Oh man. Well, so do we want to talk?
Oh no, yeah, this thing's been sitting up behind us.
Let's talk about this awesome. What would we call that? A plate?
It's a pizza pan.
It's pizza pan.
I'm going to give it over to Spanky, but there's that, and then we're going to.
So tell us about this.
Well,
show it to the camera, Spank.
The camera can see it. It's a pizza pan, and Mark Hagstorm up in Ohio. Was one of my vendors in our automotive art museum in Hebert. And in the street rod shop, I had a pinstriping automotive art. It had to be something handmade and cool. And Hebert had a lot of art galleries and stuff downtown. And the lady that put it all of that on wanted to do a blues-themed deal. So I'm like, hey, Mark, next month we're having a blues theme art walk where, you walk from gallery to gallery. You know, it's like a Friday night or Saturday night. And I would stay open and do that, even though I was a hot rod shop. You know, I had the cool stuff that people would want to come see. So he did me a couple of pieces that had blues in them. Not just the color blues, but this says hot rod blues.
That's so crazy. All right.
This was done. He goes by Fat Daddy and very, very, very well known pinstriper. This was done in 2010.
Wow.
So just so way before.
So just so everybody knows, like, we were anything, but like the inception of our name was something that we brainstormed. We had like, I think we did that on a podcast and we settled on the name on a podcast. It was one of the early ones.
On the first one?
Was it the first one or second one?
No, the third one.
The third one.
Remember, everybody came up with all these names, and we had a list of them, and we all went through it.
But yeah.
I think the first two actually had a different name, and we didn't pick up Hot Rod Blues to the third one.
Yeah.
But, that's amazing.
I want to give this to you guys, whatever y'all want to do with it, because it means more now to you guys than it does me. It's just been hanging on my wall for a while.
Wow. That's cool. You know, thank you.
So,
yeah, he sent me a picture of that, and I was like, man, that is super awesome.
Yeah,
I
just whipped that up last
thanks,
night.
Man.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I had no clue he was pinstripe that like pinstripe. That. Like, I was like, wow. And no, then when we got like, here, you're like, yeah, that was painted like 10 years ago. I was like, what?
You went back in time and painted that? That's
Mike, that's not what's happening here.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do pinstripe, but it takes me, 6 months to get back, you know.
That's funny.
There's a DeLorean in the back that goes 88 miles an hour.
Scott's.
I thought you.
Doc!
I thought he was doing all the right things to get us to come back. He gave us pizza. He provided
I'll
drinks,
be honest with you.
Making us
to
that.
Present day, you are absolutely the best host that we have.
That is no disrespect to any of those
sorry, the rest
people
of the guys
that had us there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
He hit all the marks. Fed us. He had cookies on the table when we got here.
He specifically got drinks that he knew we liked from watching the shows. How epic is that?
That's true.
Wow.
Sean Young had his girl beer in the refrigerator. That's crazy.
Yeah, except for the White Claw.
He did not have the White Claw.
I couldn't do that.
Have a White Claw for Mike.
Just couldn't stand in line with that. No.
Well, you know.
Oh, that's nuts. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I appreciate that background.
Well, thank you. That's really
really been working something out between my shoulders.
Yeah.
He's a good body guy, if you know him.
All I'm saying is Sean was like, see if there's Dr. Pepper cream soda in there.
Oh,
like,
my God.
We are in Hernando.
Yeah.
Might be able to get it.
Yeah, they were all out.
No worries, man.
We tried.
No worries.
Every time I go to a gas station, you know where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I'm in Binghamton. Hey, guys, I'm going to the gas station. Want me to give you something? Every single time this guy says, cream soda, Dr. Pepper. I'm like, man, that's at the corner of Summer in Hollywood. There ain't going to be no cream soda, Dr. Pepper. You can get an orange drink.
There's a chick working down there named Cream Soda. You don't want to talk to her.
That's
did I give you your first one? I feel like I introduced you to that.
No, you didn't. No,
I feel like it.
You bought me some one time, and
I think that was enough. I was supporting your habit.
Yes, that's it. Oh man. So you've been in Hernando now. I mean, you've been here for a long time. But when did you move back here to
do stuff here? Probably about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, we were in Olive Branch, raised our family there, and started in Memphis, and then. Got out of there, Olive Branch, then college came for them, so we left and then came back to here. Grandkids brought us back or we'd still be there, you know. Kids and grandkids.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Spanky, where does that come from?
Back to the tire business. I had a secretary and lunchtime, me and one of the guys in the warehouse, you know, I was the manager and he was my warehouse guy and we were out playing frisbee like we did every day at lunch or shoot basketball or something like that. And we came back in and she said, you look like Spanky and Alfalfa, you know? And I was like, hush, did you order those business cards like I asked you to? He said, I'll get right on it. So, my business cards came from the home office and about 3 weeks later, I get my business cards and it was Mike. Spanky.
Yes.
So for the first
payback.
Hour for the first hour and a half I was kind of mad, and then I had a good rapport with my customers, and she told one or two, and you know, before you know it, in a 500 mile radius of Memphis, nobody ever called me by my name anymore,
and you never hushed anybody again,
you know. So I've had two, three businesses named it with, you know, Spanky's Tire Connection and Spanky's Hot Rods and Customs, you know, so you can't run from it. Use
you
it.
You got to own it.
Yeah. You know, so.
Awesome. Own it.
So, I mean, you know, that's how that came about, you know. I don't know why, you know. I mean, as skinny as I am and all. I guess it could be worse. Yeah. I could have been Alfalfa.
You could have been Alfalfa.
Yeah.
50-50 shot on that. Yeah. Alfalfa's hot.
Mike, Alfalfa.
Sounds
yeah.
bad.
Yeah. I came out okay on that 50-50 toss.
So I got another question, just because I've been sitting here like squirrel like I always do. What is up with all the yeah. things up here with the arrows.
Well, those are picture frames, you know, yard sale. I paid like a quarter a piece for them or something like that. And somewhere, and I'm going to have to get them all done again, but the most, I think there's 13 up there, the most 13 influential cars that I've ever built, I got cool pictures made for them, you okay. know, and they go in there. But
just know, hadn't got around to putting the pictures
in there.
If
y'all had gave me just two more days, you know.
Right.
Well, you had to have that anniversary in there, you know.
You see these lights. You can't see the lights, but there's some lights, and they're exactly 16 feet up from the floor. They've been on my workbench for 4.5 years.
Did we do that?
I put them up yesterday just for you guys.
Wow.
Thanks, man.
I stood at the top, on the top of a 12-foot step ladder and hung those up. I had to wire the outlets. Then I had to go back up there again and hang them up.
Good for you, man.
Only because you guys were coming.
And when we came here, he said, I hate heights.
Oh, I hate heights.
Yeah. I'm not good with it. I hate being on the top of a ladder.
Yeah.
Like if you're on the very top of a ladder.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't like open heights.
Mm-hmm.
I can go up in a skyscraper and look down, no problem.
Right. But
man, do not get me like on the edge of a cliff, mm-hmm. something like that. You get that weird vertigo kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
When I ran the wires, you know, I could lean a really nice 30-foot ladder only extended halfway up there and lean it against the rafter. Now it's sheetrock, so you got to use a step ladder.
Oh, yeah.
And then I told Susan, I was like, give me about 15 minutes and come out and check.
Make sure I'm not
laying. She said, well, you want me to stand there? No.
Yeah, I want you to see
this. I do not. So she came out as I'm going back up. Well, I already got the outlet done on one. I'm going back up with it with a ladder, and I heard the door shut. She's being real quiet, didn't say anything. I was like, I know you're down there. Give me another 10 minutes. You know, I was like, she said, I'm just going to stand right here. No. You can hear it, but I don't want you to see it.
Oh, man.
You know,
yeah, right.
I mean, she said, where are you going to land at? I mean, either in the back of that truck up there or down on the concrete, you know.
Hopefully it's a truck.
Yeah, hopefully it's a truck.
The truck's on a two-post lift, man. You go.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
It may be coming down.
Might be truck. Yeah, they don't call me Spanky for nothing, you know. I'm going to be that counterweight that's going to go the wrong way.
Call you Splatty after
that. Yeah.
I'm not good with heights either.
No, I mean,
I don't do it.
I used to when I was a kid, but now I know what happens, you know, when you hit, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I have. I've been clumsy here lately. I mean, I drove the Roadster to Illinois for the Roadster run, and I get out to get gas on this side of St. Louis because I didn't want to get it in St. Louis.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, of course you got to go to the bathroom. I stop every 100 miles or so just to put fuel in it, you know. And so it's like, I better not do fuel first. I know what happens. You know, I got to go. So I took off and I'm walking fast and I hear backfire. And I'm not in a bad part of town. No, it wasn't my car. It was just a backfire. So I kind of glance over my shoulder. And at that split moment, walking fast, glancing over my shoulder, next thing I know, I'm on the ground. I tripped over some concrete. I broke both wrists.
No.
Jeez.
Man.
Manual car, 4-speed, you know, and I'm on the way to the Roadster run.
Yeah.
So you know, 30, 40 aspirin later, I'm back home, you know. I mean, I did the whole weekend.
You did?
Broken wrist.
Oh, man, yeah.
Epic.
I mean, that's, you know, that's, I live for that weekend every year.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's 250 of us or so, and
You buy some wrist braces or anything?
No. There was
soldier.
Soldier.
But, you know, when I came back, you know, my next door neighbor, what do you call those bone doctor dudes?
Orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, he's actually an orthopedic surgeon. And he come over wanting to go. You know, he's in his little golf cart. He said, hey, let's go play golf, you know. And I was like, man, I can't right now. I can't really hold on
to a golf club.
Yeah. So he goes, like, so what happened? So I told him what happened. So he grabbed this wrist. You know, this was 2 weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, hey, you broke your so-and-so, so-and-so. And I said, well, this one, I can't open a door. You know, I couldn't do this motion here.
Yeah.
You know, this one here hurt when I did that. So he touched this one, and it's that bone that's sticking up right there.
Yeah.
I broke that.
Your ulna.
Ulna. Exactly.
Yeah. Radius.
Yeah.
Ulna.
Radius and ulna. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Paramedic.
But in his golf bag, he had a little wrist thing that would go around that ulna
yeah.
and tighten up. Saved my life, man. You know, the doctor wanted like 6 weeks in a cast. You know, it's like, you don't know what I do for a living.
Right.
You know, so I got a lot of upholstery work done then and some wet sanding, you know, yeah. until things, you know, worked out. Yeah. So I've had a few of those little things happen like that. So I have to be careful these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about this Roadster Run.
Well, it started out as a Facebook group, and we're Midwest Roadster Run. And what started out to be probably 20 or 30 guys that all knew each other through Facebook, we all decided to meet. And when it all came down, there was about 30 of us, 35. And we met in Alton, Illinois, and we run the river road, go across a couple of ferries, a couple of old bridges, you know, real cool bridges, and just stay off of the interstates.
Right.
And the next year, there were 75 of us. The next year, there was over 100 of us. And the next year, there's even more than that. And then 2020 hit. And then 2020 kind of knocked us back a couple of years because now still there's still a lot of people that don't want to right. travel. The hotel that we stay at is a real cool hotel, and they didn't do the buffet, and they didn't do this, and they didn't right. do that. You know, so, you know, but we average probably 100, 150 cars. And then there's probably about 20 cars that go – that local guys that hang back and, you know, hang with us, but they're not really a roadster kind of thing.
Right.
We, Friday, we do a garage tour around the St. Louis area, probably about 150 miles. And we go to about five or six different home garages, shops, really, really cool stuff. And, we do something different every year. And then on Saturday, we all meet at the marina on the river. And we run about 250 miles, and we got a very famous sprint car guy up there, old school sprint car guy that has got many, many, many drivers under his belt that have been real famous. His son owns an Indy team, and he's got a farm there. He's down in Texas, but he's got a farm up there on the river. He cooks us everybody free. Music, food, dessert, the whole deal. And he's got a beautiful farm, and all these cars are all parked out on his farm. And then from there, you just hang out and, you know, but the hotel night at the parking lot at night is just cool. And yeah. we all go eat, you know, cruise. But I got a lot of videos on YouTube about it. And
super
and
cool.
Really, really. It's probably the most funnest event that I've ever done. And there's free, no awards, no
right,
nothing.
Right.
And that's all, that's me there.
It should be.
I you know, when I was a kid, I did car shows, but as a professional builder, adult car guy, man, I go late and I leave early.
Right.
I don't protest car shows at all, but I mean, you know.
Yeah. What time of year is that?
It's usually late spring, early summer. I mean, just perfect.
You're not invited, Mike.
Oh, I'm coming.
Yeah. Oh, no, you need to go.
Not this year, because I doubt my car will be dependable enough by this year, but the following year. I'm with you.
No, man, it's and there's so many. I mean, I've had the first year I went up there in that one, I came home on six cylinders. I had I knew better, but I didn't. But I put that motor together, and it had a set of double hump heads that I sent to my buddy, and he did the all new valves and all that stuff. I supplied him with everything. Well, when they put the screw and studs in, he drilled all the way through on four jackets.
No compression on two cylinders.
No. So I'm sitting over here right behind me and going to put my water in. I mean, I've got 7 days before I'm leaving out to go, and I still don't have my car's not finished. I mean,
right.
You know, I want to put some miles on it. And the fifth gallon of water / antifreeze I put in there started coming out those carburetors.
Oh my God. It was full.
You're like,
yeah. I'm like, you know, my Walker radiator, I mean, I've built a bunch of these 32s before, and I've never, ever put 5 gallons of water in.
Right.
You know, and when it started coming out the four carburetors, I'm like, what could be wrong? Seriously.
Right. I mean, how did that get there?
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, well, that experimental intake, I know why it's experimental now.
Right.
Because the crossover is not, you know.
Right.
So that was the first thing. I'm like, okay, I've got a carburetor and a four barrel and all that. I'll just put that on there. We're going, you know. And so then that wasn't it. I turned the intake over and I put, you know, the aluminum tape, HVC tape on all the ports, and I started putting water in and it held that water.
The
intake's off and it's sitting on here on the table. So
it's just
I'm backtracking
all of my work the problem
out. Yeah. So I was like, the intake's fine, you know? So, long story short, I did the same thing to the head, to the heads. And, sure enough, you know, I covered the ports up and start pouring water in the water jacket, and it started coming all out everywhere.
Ugh.
All in the, nope. So, but you could not see. That's the thing. I took the headers off. I was looking all up in every port, everywhere I could look to see, you know, where water would be coming out of.
Because it's drilled all the way through.
Yeah, but it was drilled down to where you couldn't reach up in there and feel it or see it or anything. So anyway, I called Blueprint. They sent me a set of aluminum heads, and I put those on there. I had to scuff them, paint them the brown to match, you know, because I'm not a, you know, don't want nobody to look at it and stop because of aluminum heads. I want everything to be, you know, just clean. And so those heads and the way that they were done, I needed special push rods. And Comp Cams had 2. Jegs could get me 4. I mean, I needed 16, of course.
Right.
You know? And by the time I called 6 different places, literally, I couldn't come up with like 12. So I'm like, well, what could it hurt to run these? They're the same length. They weren't hardened, you know. And you could not run the heads without the guide plates because they weren't like OEM heads. There's too much slop there, you know.
Right.
I'm like, what could it hurt? I'm only going to go 500 miles. everything's fine and dandy. I make it up there and all that. And then I did the garage tour deal, and then we're doing the Roadster run. And we all try to get out as much as we can when we're pulling out in front of people, you know, just see how many we can get, how many, you know, who all want to stay together.
Right.
So, a little bit of Hicktown coming through the pasture and the cornfields and all that. And there's no cops or anything. So I'm going to hammer down and we're going to all get out as many. We're going to get 10, 15 cars out before the next car comes. And I went, and as soon as I shifted, pow, and I could feel it through my gas pedal. And I got a low carb cable on there. So it's not mechanical. You shouldn't feel the lift but it lifted my foot and it backfired. And I'm like, I hurt something and it wouldn't even start back. And we were coming up to a gas stop at that point. So I had enough juice to get to the gas station. And I sat there and I was spinning it, trying to get it to crank. All it really did was flood. But it had wore a push rod completely in two. So when I got on it, it bent that push rod. Mm. And I opened the valve cover and I saw that. I just screwed the valve cover back down. And everybody goes, you okay? I say, yep, I'm fine and dandy. no lie.
Everything's fine. Good to go.
I had one ferry to cross, and we were right there in that town. So I crossed that ferry, and I had probably 20 miles to go before we got to that farm. And from that farm, after lunch, probably had another 20 miles or so to go. So I only had like 50 or 60 miles to go. And plus come home. But,
plus the 6-hour drive back.
I'm thinking, where's the closest pillow kind of thing, you know, and restaurant type deal. And I patched up what I could with a few push rods and stuff, but all of them had a wear mark.
No guide plates.
You know, that were riding on the guide plates.
Yeah.
Right. And it's amazing what a hardened push rod will actually do.
Right.
And what a stock push rod won't.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because...
So when they say you need hardened push rods,
yes, you need
them.
Yeah, because they are not going to go anywhere. They are meant to ride if they have to.
That's
now,
right.
I adjust them as much as I could to keep them off.
Right.
You know, they wore right through it. So knock on wood. I mean, I changed the oil 5 or 6 times and got all the metal out, and I guess, and you know, and it's one of them deals where it's the motor's not going to come out until it has to come out.
Right.
I mean, you know, I just fix it later when something happens, you know, but.
Obviously, it's good. I mean, you drove it and what was it, like 27 degrees at the.
Yeah, it's like 20-something degrees.
Oh, coming home from the riders reunion?
That's without the windshield. That's the actual temperature.
Yeah. You had the matching knit beard, though.
I tell you what, man.
That was epic.
Dude, you had to be so front. I don't know how you saw, because, like, when I get real cold like that with wind in my face, like, my eyes are tearing up so bad and stuff. Like,
you're crying.
There's no way. I could not have seen
his white claw freezes in his hand.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean.
You don't want to see it.
My face was fine. My son had gave me these driving gloves that he was using. You know, I say driving gloves, but I was using them to drive with, but they were real slick, and the steering wheel's real slick.
Yeah.
So the steering wheel, I mean, you really had to put the death grip on it to keep it from sliding.
Yeah.
Well, when we came home, we didn't have those gloves.
Oh, my.
So it was like sit on this hand, and then when you need to shift gears, and then sit on this hand for a little while.
Ooh.
Because my hands were the
that's
what took the blunt, you know. And I guess I drove all the way around. I got on the interstate, got on 369, you know, somewhere over there in Collierville area, just to you know, speed things up. But actually, the temperature sped up too.
Yeah.
The wind chill factor went to a million.
You know, I waved my son off at his exit. He just stayed right behind me.
And
I was like, man, I told you, you should have just, he said, man, I kept seeing you switching hands. I didn't think you were going to make it, you know? I was like, it was cold.
Did your wrist start hurting from the injury?
No. I mean, that's actually pretty good now. I mean, there for a while, even after it stopped hurting, I would have these little nerves in here hurt and my wrist would be like sprung. But the bone part of it didn't hurt anymore. But
tell us about
getting old stinks, man. Yeah.
Where are we setting at?
Yeah, we're like hour 20.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna have you
126.
Have you do your, for everyone at home your YouTube channel? Actually, spell that out for them.
Yeah, Spanky's Hot Rods and Customs. I mean, just Spanky's Hot Rods and Customs on YouTube. Same thing on Instagram, Facebook, and. No, I don't put as much work on any of those. I just put tee shots and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, just keeping people interested, not showing off kind of thing, you know.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know.
Well, I mean, being a one-man band is hard enough.
Yeah.
And I know that just from the stuff that I'm doing. Like, if you want to put – like I've tried to do stuff on the Instagram, and I'm – like, this is taken away from what I'm actually trying to do.
Right.
Like and then the editing, which hats off to Sean for everything.
Because
he's our main editor. So
that's a lot. Editing is a lot of work. I mean,
it's enough to just get content, but then you have to make it, chop it up and make it look cool. And you're like, I don't have the energy
to get you guys excited about sending pictures, you know, all of that.
Right? Yeah.
You're going to get all mine.
The Facebook, I mean, the YouTube deal has kind of been, I'm a little late to the game. But I feel but I feel like I've got something to do. I mean, I need to share something, you know, whether I know anything and, you know, entertainment value, or I'm just trying to encourage people not to hurt me and Mike, because we're both in this business to have customers, but we'll have customers no matter what. But I am trying to encourage somebody to get off the couch and get out in the garage and do something. And I sign off every video that same way. You know, if you're through watching, get off the couch. Or if you're through watching, get out in the garage and go build something. I don't care what it is, whether it's a birdhouse, just go use some tools.
Yeah.
You know, because we've got to stay active and all that. So I'm just trying to give something back to anybody that's willing to watch and, you just having a good time. And I guess you could say showing off a little bit, but I try not to the stuff that I do, I try not to show off. I try not to use any kind of tool that the DIY guy doesn't have or has access to. There's guys on there with their pull maxes and they're this and they're that, and they're trying to show you how great they are doing stuff. And I watch some of them, you know, and they're all cool. But and you can watch those for entertainment. But, I mean, the DIY guy's not learning anything. It's not an encouragement. So I'm just really trying to encourage people to do their own work. Have a good time, enjoy the hobby for what it is, and, you know, built, not bought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know,
you know, it's a lot different than it was 15, 20 years ago as far as building cars. I think your average guy is kind of taking it to the next level.
Right.
I see a lot of things, you know, father and son teams that are bringing cars out that are just absolutely amazing.
Right.
You know, good for them, man. I think that's where it's at right now.
That's right.
Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with YouTube and social media and people sharing techniques. And because, you know, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, you couldn't pull out your phone and look how to
anything, really.
Make a damn door panel or whatever.
Sure.
Change a water pump on anything. Right. I mean, you go to YouTube for everything. It's all accessible now.
Yeah.
Well, when I was having all those 9-inch problems, I learned how to set a 9-inch up, you know, by watching videos.
Right.
You know, you couldn't have done that, you know, a while back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
you know, kinda crazy.
And the hope is not just to garner interest in this generation, but this is out in the interwebs, interspace. It's out there.
Right.
Right.
You're going to be able to access this for as long as technology is accessible.
Right. So, right.
Well, I mean, you know, on the same note, that's kind of why we started this was because, you know, we saw the guys and the rodders and stuff, you know, they're getting older. We got the stories, like, you know,
we start cataloging and documenting.
I mean, somebody's got to have that stuff. You know, I mean, Lewis Kimmery did great job with the videos and stuff at the rodders reunions and stuff. But it was like, you know, they just got all these stories and stuff. It's, you know, it needs to be in more than just one place. And, you know, so that was kind of our thing was like, hey, you know, what the heck? And then it was like, well, it's not just rodders, but everybody's got some cool stories that, you know, of stuff that they've done and, you know, all the super shops and Summer Avenue and stuff like that. So it was like, you know,
if a picture's worth a thousand words, you know,
what's
having a video and interviewing somebody is priceless. Yeah. I mean, that's timeless, like you said.
It's not as good as print magazine.
That's enough. That's enough stroking ourselves is what I was about to say, but then Sean had to say that.
Still got to have a print magazine.
I do miss the print magazines. I mean, you know, I had quite a few of them, and they did really well. They did a great job helping me get my business going.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You know, that is, I think that's one thing that's kind of gone away a little bit as far as, I mean, it still does help, right, to be in a print magazine. And but the problem is that there's not as many people looking at them.
Right.
And it doesn't, and there's so many other mediums out there. Mm-hmm. It's not the thing.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like, I disagree to a point.
Well, I'm just saying to launch.
Well,
like, because it used to be people would, you know, you'd go to DeCoin and you would unveil your car at DeCoin. Nobody knew anything about it until DeCoin, and then it was like, oh, you know, and then there's 20 magazines, you know.
So I disagree from a different point of view, which is like you're pushing volume numbers per issue. I'm talking about if you yourself were to get your car featured. And it doesn't matter that we're not pushing that anymore or that somebody knew that this was just because your own YouTube content suggested that there might be something cool coming to get that printed still. And I'll go back to a very recent one.
Which has status.
Status and like not just status for the community, but like you personally as an achievement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
More recently, and we bring Gene up, but like when his car made it, it was like, and you could ask him, you could call him right now and ask him. That was one of the most, I mean, for anybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's that's epic. It's huge. It's like one of the things you always dream about. I'm going to get a car in a magazine or maybe I'll never get a car in a magazine and it winds up happening.
And that was something that I fought with, you know, when I was with Acceleration Media and even Power Auto Media just did digital magazines. Right. So like you go up to somebody and you're like, hey, I'd like to do a feature on your car. And they're like, oh, awesome, man. What magazines is it going to be? And it's like, well, it's a digital magazine. And they're like, what's a digital magazine?
It's like crypto? Well, it's like crypto, it's not real. Yeah. Fantasy land on the internet?
Yeah, you know, and they'd be like, oh, what's a digital magazine? I'm like, well, it's a website or whatever. And they're like, okay, yeah, sure. There's not that same excitement.
There sure is.
No. So you're just going to shoot this whole thing on your iPhone, huh?
Yeah.
It's a 14 Pro Max.
Hey, I'll tell you what. There are people who still do that. And don't get me wrong. An iPhone, Samsung, whatever will work, you know, but there's there's something about carrying that camera at least that gives you a little bit of credibility where they're like, okay, like this guy actually has a $2,000 lens on there at least, right. You know.
Hey, my Apple costs $1,000.
I'm still financing mine.
$25 a month.
Yeah. Right on the bill. They don't even tell me about it.
And you know, that's the thing though, is getting your car in a print magazine. And I feel like, you know, it's important for car guys to support magazines and the magazines that are out there, because like that's what at least me and I hope the next generation coming up, like that's what you aspire for. You know, you're looking at the magazine, you're like, one day I'm gonna have a car in this magazine.
That was me. I mean, you know? I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, and I know the day that it happened, it was just great.
Right. You're like, oh my God.
Oh, a car sure I worked on. Yeah.
Everybody, it's an out-of-body experience almost. You're like, no, is this actually happening?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean, even today, I mean, if, it, you know, they shot the little orange car right there. And I mean, that was probably the 15th or 16th car that I've had done. And I was still excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, not excited about seeing it in the magazine or anything like that.
That just it was happening.
Just excited about somebody thought.
Recognized.
Somebody thought enough of it to, you know, to do it.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it don't matter who you are. It's still, or how many times it's been done, it's still exciting.
Yeah. 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 So we definitely should press, you know, people to get print magazines and support print magazines because that's a big deal.
Yeah. That, big call back to the orange car. Mm-hmm. I just realized this because you said it was a Reese's. So you're technically standing in peanut butter when you're.
That's right.
I know that's very off,
I try not to drive it when it's 100 degrees because it gets messy. Like the other night when it was 20 something.
No problem.
Wheels held up fine.
like a frozen Reese's.
Yeah.
I see what
melts
you did there.
Melts in your mouth and in your hand. Kind of.
It's a hard candy shell.
Yeah, it's a
hard
candy
shell. You got a hard candy shell.
Well, guys, we've been here a minute.
Yep.
Yeah. I could give one. Just got to say one thing. So the automotive industry lost another big name person. If you're in the automotive aftermarket, Smitty Smith passed away suddenly this year. For worked for Edelbrock for 30 years, and he was the, when you said the name Edelbrock, Smitty Smith. Smitty Smith would be the first guy that comes to your brain. So he was the face of Edelbrock for a long time, just because he became an ambassador for the company for what he you know for what he did, and he was at the trailer. You know, he was on the trailer all the time. People knew him from, you know, drag racing, from car shows, everything. So So our prayers go out to his family and. And actually, you know, the Edelbrock family as well. So,
mercy.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, for sure.
So Mike, tell everybody where we went Friday night.
Tell everybody. Well, you know, Harleywood.
Gold
Do you
Club.
Know Harleywood?
Harleywood?
Yeah, yeah. But he's long-term friend of Blue. They consider themselves brothers.
Yeah.
You know, an unfortunate accident. Right. His daughter passed away, and we went to her celebration of life at an MC club.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the first time Sean's ever been to an MC.
Very first.
Yeah, yeah. And he had no clue. And I'm like, you know, I'm trying to kind of prepare him for what an MC was, but I think I overly prepared him because. Now, mind you, it was on Elvis Presley, north of 240.
Oh, yeah.
If that tells you anything.
Bellevue.
Yeah. And it was the nicest motorcycle club I've ever been in my life. It was epic. It was huge, and it was beautiful. I was like, this is not what I was preparing you for, but it was definitely a heartfelt thing. And,
sure, absolutely.
And it was great. To go and to support Hollywood, but it was also a really cool experience. Definitely for Sean, his wife, and my wife too. She had never been to anything like that, but we had a good time.
Absolutely,
we did. It was it was definitely a good time to be had. So thoughts with Hollywood and all of his family and everything. Tono as well, good friend of ours, who is her long-term boyfriend. But yeah, it was epic. Hey, let's all look at Sean changing batteries.
Yeah. How's that $2,000 camera coming?
You're right. No, that's the lens. I guess they sold the batteries separately.
Good. There we go. We're back in business.
We'll just edit that part out.
Actually, I took some pictures with it, and I thought, oh, there's enough battery there.
To make it through?
Yeah, I should have charged them all the way up beforehand.
Okay. Well, Javier, you want to get us out of here, bud?
I don't know. After that,
do you have anything you want to? Do you have anything you want to add at the end of this?
Just what's the YouTube channel?
Spanky's Hot Rods and Customs
on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube.
Gotcha. Check that out.
Thanks for thinking about me and invite me to be part of this party.
Yeah, oh, thanks for being who you are and contributing to the culture and for everything you've done.
Yeah, well,
thank you. Absolutely.
Y'all subscribe to his channel, hit for the notification button, all that stuff.
Ring the bell.
Then subscribe to our channel.
Same thing here. Yeah. Same thing here.
Or vice versa. How do you want to do that?
Tell your friends because, you know, we'd like to start building this thing a little bit more. So,
that's what I try.
You know.
All right.
Yeah. SpankysHotRods.com. Get you some t-shirts and some swag if you want it.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. Coloring books, too. I should have worn my Spankies. Yeah,
I bought coloring books for all my boys for Christmas.
That's awesome. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, that's just part of trying to get the youth back involved.
That's right. You know? That's right. I thought it was epic, and they love them.
I keep Hot Wheels and stuff in all of my cars and give them away at the shows. I mean, you know, just any time a cruise, you know, Cars and Coffee or something like that, you know, it's a little kid, give them a Hot Wheels, you know.
Dig it.
I mean, something triggered us.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah,
for sure.
Very cool.
You know, so
absolutely.
So where are we at? Right here?
Right here?
Yeah,
right
wherever you want to be.
This has been Hot Rod Blues on location at Spanky's Hot Rod Shop. We'll catch you next week, where our guests will be undetermined. Take two. We're going to try that again.
All right. Do it again.
See you later. No, that's fine. Let's leave it at that. Let's see it like that.
Kill it.
Sorry, Spanky.
Bye.